system online. Initiate transfer protocol. Your turn next.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Your Turn Next. I'm DC, one of the hosts, and I'm here with Tony.
Hey, everyone.
And Reese. Hey, everyone. Just kidding. Reese couldn't be here today, so she is very busy this week, which is understandable. A lot of us have plenty of things going on that we need to take care of, but we do have someone else with us. It's not just Tony and I chatting. We also have Ryan.
How you doing?
Ryan has gamed with me for many years, not so much recently, but back in the day we used to play role-playing games together, board games, miniatures games, pretty frequently.
Yeah, pretty much every day almost.
For a while there, yeah, it was pretty much all the time. And he has also playtested with me, so we are going to revisit the playtest topic a little bit. The last article on Clockwork Phoenix Games was about making great playtest feedback. And I talked a bit about how important that is because it helped the developer make a better game. It also can be a great tool for becoming a better game developer yourself, like being able to not just understand a game, but also be able to communicate that game is a critical skill. So, Ryan, you've playtested a number of different things. Do you have any thoughts on playtesting as far as the process goes or on how to provide good playtest feedback?
I'm from beginning, since I basically learned how to playtest from you, I mean, a lot of my thoughts on the subject kind of line up with what you put in your article. It really comes down to you're not just playing a game, you're really trying to develop a game. And like you said, you are a mini developer. Yeah. It's hard to get that across when you're coming from a game. Everybody's played against that guy that is prone to hyperbole, and you just need to take a step back and avoid that.
Yeah, I saw an interesting article coincidentally this week about playtesting and about kind of the 8 archetypes that this particular developer likes to make sure he has around the playtest table. There are things like the power gamer or the passive player, the person who tries to win by not engaging with the other players. Some pretty typical things that we all would think of, but also he brought up some that I don't usually think of too much because it doesn't fit people I game with very well. One of them being the random player. Anytime that person does something, you have no idea. There's no consistency, no strategy. I have played with people who seem to be doing that, but they think they're doing some sort of a strategy. So it was an interesting read how other people are viewing this playtest system, this playtest process, and applying their own methods to it as well.
I think it's a pretty interesting, you know, kind of track to go down because, you know, it is good to kind of bring all those people in because that power gamer will think completely different than that person's going to try to disengage as much as possible. And they're going to find different ways to really break the system and, you know, in the end, make it a better play experience for everybody who gets the game at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't remember what the archetype was called in the article, but the player who, regardless of whether it makes him win or lose, just tries to, like, mess with all the other players. The screw you sort of player.
Oh, that is so much fun.
Oh, well, now we know one of those types.
I love doing that so much. Well, my thought is, you know, going to like a role-playing setting, the gaming group that I've always played with, they're, you know, a lot older than me. You know, it was always if the GM could not keep us, you know, focused, then we would kind of create a game for ourselves, you know, and it was, you know, kind of really put the GM into like really being on point. And I kind of just like that. It's like, man, dude, hell or high water, this is going to be fun. Like, don't care if we screw the whole party.
Well, I don't know if you guys play Dominion much, but Dominion has elements in it where you can screw your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And Jess will not play with any of those cards anymore. she likes to be a friendly player. She likes to work with everyone. I mean, she still tries to get the most victory points, but she doesn't want any of the cards in there where it's like cause your opponents to lose cards, cause them to take curses, like any of the detrimental effects that some people find fun. She would rather leave out because she just wants to try to reach the goals, not have someone constantly stopping you and hindering you.
See, I've played probably 200 games of Dominion, and I feel the same way about not playing with like the attack cards, but it's for a completely opposite reason. I just think they're terrible. Like, they're just, they don't do enough to make you win. So it's just, it's not a good card to play. I think I'm more for the spike aspect as opposed to the, I just want to avoid conflict aspect.
Yeah, well, and it comes back to the various archetypes, whether we're talking about playtesters or gamers in general. Some people are just in it to screw with people. Some people want to just have fun and build a cool engine. Some people want to win and aren't too worried about any of the particular avenues to get there. What's the most efficient in this particular game to get me to victory?
And that's exactly the road that I tried to follow every single time. I mean, obviously, I'm going to go marketplace every time, but I'm going to avoid every attack I can just because it's just doesn't get me there.
So the three of us are currently in a group of playtesters for Stormlands. Stormlands is a board game currently under development by Clockwork Phoenix Games. And through the Kickstarter that we already did, we picked up a bunch of different playtest groups all over the place, as well as some folks on a character design team. So we've been fleshing out the world a bit. We've also just started to do some playtesting externally. As some of you guys might have already heard, we did some playtesting at an Unpub event, and also I've done some local playtesting, but now it's going global, and we're going to get a bunch more people in on the action. What do you guys think about what you've seen so far from Stormlands, or what you hope to see in the future?
So what I'm really excited about is, you know, with the Stormlands, it's going to take on a genre that I really like. I like the whole idea of a post-apocalyptic world, but I love the fact that it's going to be, as the name suggests, very storm-oriented. It's not the you know, desert. It's, you know, these ridiculous storms that are coming out. And, you know, with me, like, I've been kind of, when I'm looking at, you know, the group of people that I'm going to play test with, I'm pulling on, you know, some of my really good friends, you know, that all have, actually, it's funny what you're talking about, those very different play styles. You know, I have my one friend, he's a very, very methodical individual, you know, really likes to think of the situation kind of the quickest, easiest way. And then I have another friend that's just straight up power gamer. He's going to go for the strongest things, not necessarily screw anybody over, but that's just the type of person he plays. And then the third person I'm looking at, you know, he's more like me, where he just wants to kind of watch the world burn.
And it's a little different in a co-op game. Stormlands is set in a post-apocalyptic world, as Tony mentioned, but it is a cooperative game at heart. So players aren't really trying to beat each other so much as find ways to work together for victory, which puts things in a different light. We've talked in past weeks about how co-op games can kind of help bring different types of gamers together. And the same is true here. We want to have all those different types of playtesters represented, but you don't have to worry about vendettas between players or things like that interrupting or corrupting the playtest process. That was another one of the archetypes mentioned in the article, where people who hold a grudge. It's like, oh, well, you screwed me over at the very beginning of the game. I'm just going to keep attacking you. Doesn't matter if you're in last place. I'm just going to keep attacking you because I'm holding a grudge. But not an issue in co-op games. What thoughts did you have, Ryan, on what you've read so far or about what you hope to see from Stormlands?
Well, from what I've read, I've only really given a cursory glance at the rules so far, but I'm pretty excited about it. The whole idea of a cooperative dice game is kind of a whole new concept, and I'm pretty excited about it, to be honest with you. I mean, it takes a lot of the boringness out of Arkham Horror, I would say. You know, it's a similar type of camaraderie, but you don't have to sit out for two turns.
Yeah, it's definitely fast-paced enough that you're constantly doing things and, or at least helping other people to do things. Even slower games have had a good pacing to them. Even if people are thinking a bit, we got around the table quickly enough that hopefully that's not a real big deal where you're wondering, oh, hey, hurry up and take your turn, so-and-so. There's always one guy who's the slowest at the table.
DC.
What? Totally not me.
Got pulled out.
No. Like, I have trouble when I'm playing games online, because I'm like, just go, person. I take my turn in, like, seconds, and I'm like, all right, now take your turn. There's not that many options. The best one is probably pretty obvious. Just do it so we can get to the next part of the game.
Just let me roll my dice.
Yep, exactly. That's when some of those games have that timer, where if you sit still too long, all of a sudden, it's burning a timer.
Yeah, I just always wish those timers were shorter.
Yeah, seriously. I'm like, come on, come on, come on, come on. I really want two turns in a row.
Yeah, that would help. That would be very fast. Like, if you just took all your turns, and then after you win, they get to go.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, hey, you know what? I'm going to take three turns, and if you live, you can go afterwards.
And then you can just walk away, because they've got three turns to stop you and kill you, so it's not like you're going to come back from that.
Dude, it's pretty much the Fox News of video games, fair and balanced.
Oh, boy.
Just, that's all, that is what I am about, fair and balanced, where I win and they lose.
So, getting back to Stormlands for a second, I do want to mention that I've started to see some beginning parts of the artwork. We're trying to put together one sample character and a character design guide for working on all the other characters, heroes and villains that are going to be a part of this game. And I'm pretty excited. I don't know if you guys have looked at any of the other stuff Leandra Dawn has done, but I really like her artistic style, and I think even this very first kind of test character is coming together really well and is going to be a really compelling character in the game.
I'm really excited to see it. Are you going to be posting any teasers up for it on Clockwork Phoenix?
Probably. I will. It depends on the timing. Like, I don't know if I'll really be showing too much of kind of the work in progress stuff, because right now it's by no means final, but it is starting to really come together. The various components of what makes this character unique, the style of, like, the clothing and the like, post-apocalyptic feel to the character is already coming into focus very clearly.
That's awesome. That is so freaking exciting. I cannot wait to start seeing that. There's one thing to, like, see, you know, the rules and you kind of get into the rules, but, like, seeing the artwork, I feel like, for me, that's always really pulled me in the games, you know, whether it be really dark and gritty, that style, or, you know, like, with how Privateer Press is, like, I like that style, but I really feel like artwork and, like, I think the story always, for me personally, I love getting that stuff to really get me into that mental state of the game.
Yeah, just building on that, I think that's actually why I play a lot of the games I play, is just looking at the artwork to beginning and, like, setting the theme of the game. Mm-hmm. Is really, like, you could play a thousand different iterations of the same game, but there's going to be one that holds my interest just because the art and the setting really are something that grabbed me. Privateer Press, that's the reason I got into War Machine in the beginning, was just because the whole, like, magic steampunk vibe just really resonated with me, so I latched onto it real fast. Warhammer, even. Back, that's sure, how I met, yeah, C, playing Warhammer, and the art just really, I started right at third edition, and it was just that gritty pencil sketching that really just pulled me in.
Yeah, speaking of 40K, third edition.
Yeah.
Fantasy third edition, you were pretty young.
I was playing when I was six, that's how I roll.
I was gonna play 40K, and then one of my friends went to go buy a box, and I was like, whoa, too expensive, can't do it.
Yeah. Miniatures gaming is not a cheap hobby, but it totally depends on what you're comparing it to.
That's true.
Like, there was a friend of mine when I worked at one of the companies where I was an engineer, and his hobby was going out every weekend fishing on his boat. And it's like, oh, that really adds up. So many costs that go into, I don't know the right terms or anything, so I'm not going to even try, but into owning and keeping and having a place for and taking out your boat. It was a lot of money.
Gosh, man. I could not do that. I mean, but then again, like, I'm playing rugby, which is a different type of, you know, fun, where, you know, the fun usually ends up in hospital bills and in the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. The cost is every game takes 1 year off of your life.
It does. It does. Especially because afterwards we just drink way too much.
Oh, yeah, there is that. Yeah. I probably shouldn't say that because you're actually exercising. Most of my exercise comes from when I forgot something upstairs and have to go back up the steps.
But back to the setting, what we were talking about with Stormlands and getting to the topic, I think just the name Stormlands is really what set it off. I remember from the first email you sent out, talking, just kind of giving a general outline of the setting, as soon as it latched on to Stormlands, it really wrote the setting. It opened the world up for you.
Yeah. There's definitely aspects that really took off from there, started giving me a lot more ideas than just, oh, hey, it's post-apocalyptic, we've seen that before, but having its own spin on it that's going to influence the look. It's also got me thinking of possibly even trying to do a fairly short and fairly light role-playing game in the setting just to help build the world a bit.
That would be cool. Because, like, when I was thinking of Stormlands, I don't know if you guys ever read a book. I think it was called The Storm Thief, and it was about a paradoxical storm. And that was kind of whenever you were talking about, you know, in the setting, you know, with these random storms that come out, you know, people kind of run for cover. That was something very much I attached to, where it's very post-apocalyptic. And it's nice because, you know, the setting, it's, you know, energy is not going to be something that's going to be short supply. You know, which is, I think, dramatically different than any other type of, like, post-apocalyptic world, you know. Mad Max, they're, like, searching for, you know, oil and gas and all that. You know, and, like, with this, like, that's you don't have to worry about it. There's electricity everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, which, so it comes to that different type of stuff they're fighting for.
Yeah, and just that simple little change really opens it up to a whole new, like, unexplored world. That's so interesting that just making them fight for a different reason, how it changes the setting so drastically.
So we talked a bit about the setting that we're currently working on and mentioned some other stuff. I was hoping to take a little time, since we have already talked about playtest quite a bit, to deviate from the articles and stuff and just talk for a while on some of the settings and worlds that we like or maybe don't like and why.
So, I mean, I guess with me, I'll start off. I really like modern day horror. Well, okay. not even modern day horror. I really like modern day fantasy, I guess, is more specific. I love everyday technology. You have your computers and all that stuff, but you also have that extra layer of, like, supernatural. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the funniest things because I like World of Warcraft. Absolutely hate the idea of that setting. I hate the high fantasy, but it's something about, I guess, with a slightly steampunk era that kind of pulls me into a little bit more. It's, you know, it's almost that way with Privateer Press, you know, the Iron Kingdoms as well. I never would have thought I'd enjoy something like that, but something about, you know, the melding of the magic with, you know, like the steampunk stuff. I think that kind of, for me personally, that pulls me into a little bit, I get a little more excited than I thought I would have.
Yeah, we talked a little before about how merging different genres and stuff can really create something special and new. Like, I'm not a huge pure fantasy fan. I like it okay, but I, like you, I prefer the stuff that's got a bit of a twist to it. Mm-hmm. Like where it's semi-fantasy, but also modern or has some additional elements to it beyond just the usual tropes.
Yeah. That's why, like, I'm trying to get into the Dresden Files, but I read the first book and I was just not excited about it. But I'm trying to get back into it because it has those elements that I like. It has modern day. It has, you know, the twist with the fantasy. You know, there's wizards and all that other stuff. So we'll see.
It's kind of the Doctor Strange or Doctor Fate Moon Knight type setting of a modern wizard. How he's kind of anachronistic almost, and it doesn't really fit, but that's what makes it cool.
Yeah, I'm currently reading a book that's modern setting, but it's about this guy who's a necromancer. And
nice.
He's a good guy, not like evil necromancer taking over the world, although that'd be fun to read too.
That would be great to read.
But trying to deal with, like, supernatural things that are going wrong, yet the supernatural community around him is not very welcoming because his particular skills are in an area that's typically associated with evil. So it's kind of an interesting twist on it, yet also does that modern slash fantasy type mashup that's a lot of fun.
That's kind of neat because they're like, oh, you're supernatural, but your powers also make you a bit of a dick.
fortunately, they don't take it to the point where it's like, oh, he's so emo or hipster or whatever. He's just a guy. Like, he doesn't care what people think. He just does his thing and uses his magic for actually trying to help people. Sometimes it doesn't work as well as others, but that's okay.
How do you use your necromancy to help other people?
Most of the time in the case of this book, it's fighting against other undead and, like, using their necromantic aura and almost, like, making it backfire, which, yeah, is, like, turns out to be powerful offensive death magic against undead.
Nice.
I'm probably not explaining it too great anyway, but I'm having fun with it. I like to read a lot of new authors, not just because it's cheap, but also because I like to see what's out there. People are doing some interesting things. Mm-hmm. I read a book where it was the story of Snow White, but where the whole sleeping part was she was becoming a zombie, and then they let her out, and she infected all the dwarves and things. And it's like, that's creative. That's interesting. I like when people do something new.
Ryan, what do you like?
Well, the stuff that I've more gravitated to recently is probably similar to what you were saying, like the modern wizards, but it's more of a near future military mixed with magic and things like that. Like a military force that would be fighting supernatural stuff using regular means, using their regular weaponry to try and fight these supernatural things. That's usually where I gravitate to, or just the like near future modern warfare type settings. And steampunk, I mean, that's where I've, like I said, that's what drew me to War Machine in the first place, is just the steam age mixed with a little bit of magic is kind of different and new.
What about superhero stuff? There's plenty of that going around these days. Oh. Like or dislike?
I am so excited that The Flash finally got a TV show. Oh, you have no idea. I was fucking and so pumped. I love The Flash. Greatest superhero of all time. Specifically, Impulse is my favorite version of The Flash. Because, as the name says, he's just impulsive, and I love it. Oh, so excited. So happy.
It's hard to give The Flash ADD, but they managed to do it.
They did it so well, too. Oh, my God.
As far as my thoughts on the superhero, I enjoy it. I mean, obviously, everybody went and saw The Avengers, but I'm more of a Nolan Batman fan as opposed to a Keaton Batman fan, if that means anything.
Mm-hmm. Was Keaton the one that put the nips on?
No, that was Val Kilmer. Not that I'm a fanboy or anything, but when there's nipples involved, I just perk right up.
So do they.
That's what she said.
But as far as more comic books, I tend to gravitate more towards the magic side, Constantine, Doctor Strange. I just recently started reading the Warren Ellis Moon Knight, and stuff like that, that has a more supernatural vibe to it as opposed to the superhuman vibe.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's so many different approaches to the whole superhero thing. I just backed a Kickstarter shock, I know. I say that probably every episode.
Yeah.
But I just backed a Kickstarter where it's a comic book about a company that does all of the marketing and promotions for superheroes. And so, like, they just do, like, little twists on superhero tropes and just kind of have fun with it. In addition to the broader storyline of the comic book, they have individual little like mini stories called coffee breaks. And they had a few of those shown on the Kickstarter, like one where the people around the office have a betting pool for what superhero is going to come back to life next.
Nice.
Like there's all those office betting pools. Well, if your work is superheroes, that's the betting pool of who's the next to be resurrected somehow. There's another one where one of the guys at the company is trying to convince a female superhero to wear this new outfit that's basically like star pasties and a thong. And he's telling her it's super comfortable. So, of course, she puts him in the outfit and duct tapes him to the wall outside the building or something like that. But it was a neat idea. Like, again, with a twist. Like, mm-hmm. Took the superhero thing, but then they're like, well, what about the people who work with and for the superheroes in marketing and advertising and everything? Seemed like fun, so I backed it.
That's a pretty good backing. Like, yeah. That's exciting stuff. I feel like you find the best Kickstarters. Because every time I'm looking around, it's like, oh, Kickstarter me for making this quilt. I'm like, I don't like quilts.
You know you can choose what category you look at, right?
Don't cloud the issue with facts. Nobody wants that.
But back to settings that we enjoy or don't enjoy. I'm hard pressed to find something that I don't like outright. Maybe Spine Spur.
Yeah. For me, it's not the setting itself that I find myself not liking wholesale, but usually their lack of integration.
Yeah.
It's clear they haven't thought about some element of the setting. Like, I remember a comic book I read a long time ago where one of the big premises of this comic was these wooden airships. Like, there was this one particular type of tree that was lighter than air. But they followed through. Like, it wasn't just, oh, we want to make a comic about airships, so we're going to make this wood and it'll be lighter than air, and then that'll let us do airship things. They also built it into the world as a whole. Like, for hauling goods on, like, flatbeds, they use that wood, because why not? Why why bother having axles and wheels that can break if you have a fairly ready supply of something that just floats and you can place things on it?
And they afraid though that it would float up too high.
Well, and that's the thing, right? They approach it in different ways. You have to think about ballast and all of that, but actually doing that thinking, making things part of the setting in a way that makes sense, and even showing people like, okay, well, we're going to put these goods on and take the, like, these weights off or whatever. They've thought about it. They've given it the attention that it deserves. It always bothers me when it seems like someone said, hey, this would be cool, but then they half-ass it and they don't think about what it would mean down the road.
I think a prime example of that is Jurassic World. Oh, just okay. That movie in general. It has no forethought and no history to it. It says, yeah, we had this giant massacre here, but let's go ahead and throw a bunch of people on this island with crazy dinosaurs. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but yeah. It's pretty
I want it so bad.
There's some serious suspension of disbelief you have to do going into it. Just for instance, there's a truck that's been sitting there since 1992 that they put a new battery in and it fires right up.
Yeah, dude, that's physics.
Science.
That's how this shit works. That's what he should say.
Yeah, there are some elements that did make me wonder a little bit.
He's actually a wizard. That's why it works.
Oh, see, well, I didn't approach that.
Read a comic book.
Part of it too for me is I will accept the premise and be like, okay, that part I'll allow you to have, even though it doesn't make sense. Whether it's superheroes or magic or a type of robotics that, as an engineer, previous engineer, I know wouldn't really work. But if that's the basis, then that's fine. It's when you start getting into things that just have nothing to do with the basis that are still terribly illogical and stupid. Like Pacific Rim. You guys seen Pacific Rim?
Yes.
Dude,
yes.
The greatest movie ever.
Pacific Rim is entertaining. I will not take that away from it at all.
Say, but don't some you talk stuff about in my, that my
just,
PR.
It just doesn't make sense.
Dude, like,
oh, it's too expensive to make giant robots. Let's make a wall around the entire livable parts of the world.
That'll work. It's
tall enough to keep out giant monsters.
Dude, that is like that helps you know, the economy because people are working.
Whether or not it even works.
Hey, it's
that's
just
gonna create a job.
I could physically touch the wall. If I physically touch Gypsy Jaeger, I'd probably get arrested.
Well, that could be true. And I don't even want to start on the whole sword button.
I was literally about to say the same thing. Millions and millions of dollars into plasma weaponry, but this sword, let's go back to the Iron Age and get this to happen.
Well,
dude, yeah, that's
and
how
you need a button for it? It's like, I've been punching you for 10 minutes, I'm going to hit the sword button. And then it's like this weird chain sword thing that clicks together slowly. Like, come on!
Well, you know why? Because before they didn't put it on a button, and they went to go fist bump each other, and it cut through.
Oh, a different robot.
So, yeah, it was a different robot prototype.
They had to then make some
science,
some repairs. It cost extra money that could have gone towards building a wall.
Yeah
dude, you got to build that wall, man. I'm telling you, that's
magic.
Economy. That was like the Hoover Dam. That they were just helping feed the economy. Giant
the same,
wall.
The same could be said for characters as well as like setting stuff. Like when a character has some particular element that's weird, that's okay as long as it's consistent. Mm-hmm. But characters that do things and it's like, that character would not do that. That's dumb. It's all about thinking it all through, I think, and having a consistent world and consistent people in that world, and then having fun in that world. That's kind of important, too.
Well, and I think that's a big thing, you know, going back to, like, when you do develop the characters, you know, you have to make sure that with this guy, really, all of a sudden, he's been a dick the entire story. At this moment, would he finally really become noble? Probably not.
And that's a standard trope. That's pretty common among all stories is, I'm the dick with the heart of gold now. It's all right, buddy.
It is, but I think we can mention stories where it's handled better and stories where it isn't handled so good.
And that's true, where it's like, well, what's the reason? If there's a really good reason, I will take that leap with you. Well, I know, I'm like, oh, I can fucking believe in superheroes, but, you know, if you're a dick and all of a sudden you're nice, that's just where I fucking leave the train.
But even when you can see that transformation throughout the movie, like, some people might disagree, but I think Han Solo, you can see him going from being really...
The scoundrel.
Yeah, being self-absorbed scoundrel with, like, his one friend to actually caring more about the cause. And I think they show it enough that it's a believable transition and transformation.
Well, it's nice, too, because they're not, like, shoving down your face, like, look at Han, look how he's changing. You can see, like, the subtle change into it.
Yeah. One could argue that the opposite is true, same movie series, for Darth Vader. Like, what was enough of an impetus for his change? Like, you don't see any sort of gradual change in his character. It's like, oh, I need to be good now for storytelling.
Yeah. It's like, oh, now I'm going to be nice at the very last minute. I was okay with you killing everybody else and destroying my wife's home planet, but you touch my child with lightning. All of a sudden, I'm going to be a good guy.
Yeah. Storytelling trope versus a well-crafted character development.
I mean, you can, not to beat the current fanboy, but you could say the same thing about Jaime Lannister. He's slowly over time going through this redemption arc, trying to get back to being a good guy. He kind of is okay being the bad guy. He's kind of accepted it, but you can kind of see he's working his way towards being more of the dick with a heart of gold, really.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see how little pieces of that break down, kind of like with the Han Solo thing. Like, he lets somebody else in just a little bit for a perfectly reasonable explanation at the time. And then by the time you get years from where he started in the show, you look back and you're like, wow, he started as such a dick. And now he's kind of cool. But it's such a gradual process that it's not jarring or unbelievable. It's just fun to take that journey with him.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I think that comes down to years and years of development, though, as opposed to the check out my cool story. I just wrote it in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I think almost that's a huge foresight, too. You need to be like, hey, this is how I want my story to end. And this is how I kind of want to begin. And now I kind of have the outlines to where I could kind of, you know, work that way up.
All right. Well, I can think of plenty of topics to talk about from here, but we are at about that time, gentlemen. So thank you, Ryan, for joining us on Your Turn Next.
Thanks for having
me. Everyone, if you haven't already checked it out, please have a read of our latest article about playtesting, and please stay tuned for more information about Stormlands as we get further along in that process. But thanks for joining us, and we hope that you'll tune in again next time.
To contact Your Turn Next by email, send your message to contact@clockworkphoenixgames.com. Your Turn Next is copyright 2015 by its hosts and is released under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License.
Put a mic in the bed. And you're like, hey, Jess.
Wow. You just went to the mic in the bed routine.
No, not like that. I mean, hey, I need an adult.
So the next outtake for Your Turn Next is going to be Jess and I in bed. Is that what you want, Tony?
No, I don't. I need an adult in the room.